Hello and welcome to the Bonco podcast. My guest today is Keegan Smith. Hello.
Barry.
Keegan, how are you?
Excellent, thank you. How are you?
Good, very good, very good. That was easy. I didn't think it would work through Instagram, but there we are.
Seems as though it has. How are you today?
I'm very good, very good. Thanks very much for taking the time out to join me.
My pleasure, you're welcome.
Good man, good man. How is life in Sark?
Yeah, excellent. It's life's good. Yeah, it's a beautiful spot. It's a cloudy day today, probably the same way you are, I imagine.
Yeah. I have never heard of Sark until you moved there, to be honest with you.
Yeah, me neither.
What brought you to Sark?
Lots of reasons. The world has changed significantly in the last few years, especially the last 10 months.
Yeah.
And that was definitely part of it with a young family and whatnot. But we'd kind of already made the decision to move from Australia. And then with the changes in the world situation, it was more difficult to work out where to land. So a lot of countries weren't really open to new residents and such. So it was partly because of that. We wanted to be in Europe or closer to Europe. Lots of reasons. It's really good for online business. There are a lot of like really innovative people here in the technology and crypto space and entrepreneurs and whatnot. So that's also a good reason. Young family, super safe, beautiful, naturally very beautiful. Lots of reasons.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. I only did a little bit of research on it myself just to find out, what would have brought you there. But there's no cars on the island.
No cars, yeah. Quite a few tractors.
Nice. Why not? We have an island similar off the west coast of Ireland called Clear Island. I'd say it's similar size and similar things going on there. But very nice. Nice change of scenery for you.
Yep.
We'll get straight into it, Keegan, if that's okay.
Perfect.
It's fair to say, I'd say you're a man on a mission. Would that be fair to say?
I'd say so, yeah.
What is your mission?
Yeah, good question. I think it's been varied, but if I zoom out a little bit, I think I've always wanted to create an environment for humans to thrive in. Firstly, for myself, and try and find a life that I can live with. I think that was really a burning desire through high school, through university, through my backpacking times. I was always sort of looking for a livable environment and ideally to be surrounded by other people who were also trying to hold themselves to a standard, to develop themselves. That's really been my search, to find it, to cultivate it, to know what it is, define it. That's the mission.
When did that come about, Keegan? Like, was it a young age? I know you've traveled a lot throughout your years and stuff, as well as obviously coaching, but when did that interest come about with you?
Well, I think a lot of people have this feeling of something's not right here that starts, around 10 years old, or early teens or mid teens, somewhere around that point. I think it was about 7 or 8. I think I remember first sort of hassling some of my teachers and realizing they weren't very congruent. They weren't necessarily role models I wanted to engage with. And I started to challenge the teachers that I didn't enjoy the work of. Now, I did have some that I liked. I wasn't always the problem child, but it was probably around about that age. And then, that amplified through puberty and through high school, where I was like, yeah, this is messed up. Like, I'm not going to go into the workforce. I'm not going to live like this kind of bland, boring existence. All this stuff is kind of set up to turn us into little kind of captive, zoo creatures, slaves. I don't know. I don't know what words I was putting to it at that stage, but I just didn't want it. And I remember writing an essay about that, in my later years of high school, maybe like 16 years old. I wrote a paper just absolutely drilling the education system and conformity and and these sorts of things. And it was probably the best mark I've ever had in English. And, you know, I've battled with literacy, but that was probably the one time I actually got an A, was when I just completely dismantled the school system and the conformity that it kind of creates. It's been there for a while, and it was, you know, it's still there.
Yeah, very good. You've obviously trained with Sydney Roosters for how many years? Was it 6 or 7 years or something? You worked with them?
Yeah, so what happened there was in 2013, Trent Robinson went back from the Catalan Dragons, where I was working in the south of France with him in the European Super League, and we'd had 2 good years there, and he got recruited by the Roosters. So I thought, you know, life in France is going to be different without Trent. Maybe I want to go with him. So I applied for that role, and I got that role in 2013. And I went there, and, you know, we weren't expected to make the finals that year. The team had come 13th, I think, the season before. And, yeah. You know, we were kind of under pressure from the start. There was rumors already that another coach had been signed for the year after. And the expectation was, like, if we didn't blitz it, then this rookie coach was just, you know, kind of getting one shot. So we went in there all guns blazing, and, you know, we ended up winning the regular season, you know, the club challenge, the World Club Challenge, the final, you know, the grand final, and set the all-time defensive record for 0 scorelines for an opposing team. So it was, you know, you can't really have a more successful year than what we had that year. Yeah. But that was my only full-time year with the Roosters. And then the next year I was kind of in and out. I basically didn't want the job after that. I'd kind of done what I wanted to do in rugby league, but I didn't really know what was next. And that created some challenges with the role, because obviously you need to be all in if you're working in professional sport. It's not the sort of thing to dabble in. I was a consultant there in and out 2014. And then I went back, it's the 2018 and 19 seasons. I was a consultant again, and they actually won both of those seasons as well. So it was a pretty good run of involvement in the NRL. But yeah, that was the story with the Roosters, and then sort of was ready to move on from Australia the next year after that. So
you had a very successful first year with them, and you said you didn't want the job after that just because you had achieved so much. So you're constantly trying to self-develop, or on a journey of self-development with yourself and human performance in general. Would that be right?
I am, but I think it was still that frustration, Barry, of like the world is not as it could be, should be, would be, as I would like it. And this is not the most I can contribute, the most fulfilling thing. This is not the best environment I can be a part of. It was a positive environment. It was, you know, a great place to be a part of in lots of ways, but it wasn't. I knew there was more, and I think, you know, searching for that, you know, and just continuing to look for what would a better life look like. I think as soon as I stop pursuing that better life, then I tend to fall in a hole, and sometimes it takes a long while to get out of that. So I knew that there was something else, and I knew that I wanted to give it a shot. I didn't know if I could do it or not. But I wanted to test myself of, you know, is there something more I can be achieving, can contribute? Is there a better way I can be living? You know, that was really why I moved on.
Yeah. From your website, or the Real Movement website, this is the quote from it. So the world needs better systems of living. So the question then is, what systems of living create the best quality of life? How would you answer that question?
Yeah, I think it's a great question that we should be asking ourselves, and I guess that's why we've put it there. But I don't think, you know, it doesn't have an answer. It doesn't have one answer. I can answer it as best I can from, you know, I have some clues, and I've run a lot of case studies. You know, I've worked with hundreds of coaches, and indirectly with, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, you know, through our network of coaches around the world. I have some clues, but I mean, that's the fun. I think that this is a riddle that can't be solved. You know, it's something that we won't get to the end of. It's a wicked puzzle, as they say, and that's okay, you know. But I think the pursuit of that, of, you know, what is a great life? I mean, this is the question that the great people of history have asked themselves, and then they've, you know, written fantastic books, or, you know, had their words dictated and made contributions in art and science and such to solve that, you know. So don't profess to have all the answers, but, you know, there's certain things that have made a positive difference for me that I've tested amongst others, and, you know, we can talk about some of those things if you'd like. I don't profess to have the magic elixir for everything just yet, if ever.
Yeah. You have an impressive list of mentors under your belt, the likes of Charles Poliquin, Ido Portell, Phil Richards, and Coach Summer from Gymnastic Bodies. Would you say you specialize in any of those areas of performance or nutrition-wise, or do you just like taking bits from every area and applying it to your life and to your courses and stuff?
Yeah, I tend to take things to quite an extreme level. I'll go really all in on something and execute it to the best of my ability, and generally bring a group of friends along with me. I find that that's a very important part, also not being N equals one, or not being you versus the world. When we go down those paths, you learn a lot, and then at some point you might decide, well, yeah, this is not the complete solution, or I'd like to try something else. I've learned so much from each of those guys. They've all made massive contributions. My main mentor at the moment, I have two really. Ben Patrick is a huge influence on my life at the moment, how I train, how I think, you know, what I'm doing in business. And then I also work with a man named Paul Council, who I've been working with for about just over 6 months now. And, you know, he has solved a lot of things that other people haven't solved. he's a man of great wisdom. And, you know, we had his talk last night, and, you know, the amount of thank yous and things that you get from just having the opportunity to kind of sit at his feet, like, it's something that we don't revere people lightly in the modern world. There's fame, but there's, you know, very few people will actually acknowledge, okay, I was just in the presence of genius. With Ben and with Paul, I think people will often, you know, they'll be a bit more reverent to that, which is a great thing. But one thing that Paul does say is that he'll take the generalist over the specialist any day, you know. So better to have got as much as you could out of 1,000 books than to have read 10 books, you know, cover to cover over and over. And I think that's really what's worked for me, is to, yeah, test these philosophies and ideologies and methods, and then, you know, circle back to them and compare them to each other. And I think that's where genius comes from, is if you're rolling around the best ideas of your time in search of a better solution, and probably a different solution to what those people were searching for. If you keep rolling the best ideas of your time around, then there's a chance that you'll come up with something that makes a contribution to humanity, or at least, you know, a solution that you can live with. Those guys have been massive for me, and each of them has had their own specific mission that has led them, you know, to the conclusions that they've come to. Now that's a big point, Barry. I think a lot of people aren't really clear on, they don't zoom out and look at, okay, well, why did this person come up with this solution? Like, why are they so passionate about that? And, you know, what did they value most? What was the economy like? Even looking at Charles Poliquin, you know, absolute legend of strength, legendary strength coach. And his systems are incredibly complex. And Paul Council says the same. Look, I'm not going to dumb this stuff down for anyone. I'm going to teach it. But if you want to come with me, you know, you're going to have to up your game, kind of thing. And Charles was definitely of that mentality. But you also have to look at what the economy was like in that time. And, you know, when Charles started as a mentor, he really had to go, you know, door to door. He had to go traveling around the world, and people invested big, you know, sums of money to be with him for 2 days, 3 days, 7 days. You know, you're looking at $1,000 a day type investment. It had to be that for it to be worth his while. Now, fast forward and you look at Ben Patrick charging $50 a month for a much denser education than Charles actually gave, or a much better sort of how-to guide to apply principles of strength. And it's ridiculously cheap. Now, some people see that as, you know, a negative or disrespectful or whatever. You have to look at the economic context where Ben's now the, you know, the fastest growing, potentially the most important strength coach in the world at the moment. And he's being very, very well rewarded for it. There's actually no need for him to have those premium gates that Charles really needed to be able to do what he did. So you have to look at that, you know, economic context as well. And I think, yeah, if you apply that to all those guys or any sort of mentor, it's yeah, you have to look at things. If you can look at things from multiple perspectives, then you'll have deeper insight to what's the truth of the matter, I guess, which is what we're searching for.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul is your money mentor on the Money Club. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what we branded as. I mean, he's a genius, and money is a big part of his philosophy. But we talk about everything, and, you know, he's put me onto a lot of great minds, past and present, that I had no awareness of. I'd never heard of them, didn't know their work. And it turns out they just, you know, they solve things and thought very deeply about things that I'd been curious about or barely considered. So it's a deep philosophical and broad kind of education, as well as if you have money, then you can buy back your own time and you can invest your time, which is the non-renewable resource that we should all be valuing most. You can invest that way wherever you want, you know. So it's about finding freedom and, you know, being able to play the game of life and not be kind of dictated to and boxed in. Like, that's really it's quite a deep philosophical thing. It's not, you know, some of the, you know, Tai Lopez or Grant Cardone or whatever, like, go and get the money kind of thing. But there definitely are a lot of practical skills for achieving that as well. So it's right. It's pretty unique. And that's, you know, that's why it's like Charles Poliquin, you know, he's like the Charles of kind of life philosophy, education, finances. You know, that's where I sort of see him. And he's sort of similar to Charles, you know, he's under the radar to a large extent because he never wanted to be famous. He just helped people who wanted his help in a time where you did need to be relatively premium. I think if he was getting his career started now, his work would go viral. You know, his ability to break down concepts and such is far in advance of anything that I've seen, you know, across YouTube and books and things that I've read. Like, he's on another level, and, you know, he's solved it now for himself. Like, he solved it long ago. I think it took him 3 years, 9 months to become a millionaire from being dead flat broke at 40. And that was over 20 years ago. So he's been multiplying his money since then and making sort of good money every year. And he knows every vehicle for wealth because he likes to teach them. So he made a lot of money in real estate, and then he's made a lot of money with stocks, and then also with, you know, he's into cryptocurrencies, and he's done trading, and he's, you know, he's gone into each of the vehicles because he wants people to be able to use the right vehicle at the right time, and he wants to be able to speak from his own experience. He's also built a number of businesses, so it's pretty authentic. You know, if you look at, like, Charles and his arms, like, that's also there with Paul. You know, he's some serious, very, very serious wealth behind him to you know, be a practitioner, you know, practice what he preaches, etc. So, yeah, I mean, that's the key, Barry. If you can get yourself around people who are doing amazing things like Ben and Paul, like, it's very difficult. It's difficult not to become a high achiever. It's difficult not to, you know, to make significant changes, even if you never get to that level. I mean, I think I'm a testament to that. I'm a living proof of just getting yourself in the right environment.
And do you seek out these people, Keegan? I know, thank you for introducing me to Ben Patrick for starters, because I use his knee ability exercises almost every day, or at least 4 or 5 days a week. And I push it on anyone that comes into my classes or asks me about knee rehabilitation and stuff. It's Ben is the man I send them to. So do you seek out these people to work with you, or how does the process work with, say, the likes of Paul and Ben? You contact them originally, do you?
Firstly, yeah, you're very welcome. And the thing is, you're genius to recognize when you've seen something good, and humbleness to say, yeah, like, people need to experience this. It's a big barrier. In the modern time, you know, money's kind of corrupted people's values and a lot of things, where the best information is not necessarily being shared or available because of financial interests, you know. So it's really like uplifting to see how many coaches actually just openly say thank you to Ben Patrick and support his work and share his work and things, because it literally is a revolution. So with him, you know, it's a new technology of strength training. Like, if you look at the Nokia phone, like, it did amazing things for the world. And that's, you know, that's bodybuilding training or powerlifting training or strongman training or weightlifting, CrossFit, whatever. And then there's the smartphone. You know, that's the new era that we're going into. And initially, a lot of people will be like, I don't need a smartphone. You know, I'm fine with my Nokia. Why would anyone even want this? You know, just like we all thought, well, people my age thought, you know, why would anyone want the internet? You know, would that ever catch on? You know, it's the same thing is happening in the strength world. So some people are at the front of the curve. They're the early adopters. They go, yeah, this is obviously something beyond what we've seen before. So I saw Ben's work 2018. Someone sent it to me like, hey, check out this guy's stuff, like just a DM on Instagram. I don't know who that is. So I'd be really curious if I ever find that person. I just can't remember if it was a friend or if it was someone else or whatnot, but they said, oh, check out this guy's stuff. And I already loosely knew Jeff Wolf, who was part of the ATG system there for quite a while. So I checked it out and I was like, oh, this is very interesting, because I'm also friends with Wolfgang Unzolt, and Wolfgang is one of Charles's best students, sort of gone down a different path, but very, very detailed German. And obviously he's had a lot of other influences as well. And, you know, they sort of had some distance between them later in Charles's life, but I don't know too much of the story of that. Anyway, like, I'd been deciphering and decoding some of Wolfgang's posts, and Wolfgang shares a lot of really, really valuable stuff. He doesn't work crazy hard on marketing, I wouldn't say, but I would say he's one of the smartest guys in the world of strength. And he, you know, I was reading his post and then I saw what Ben was doing, and I'd been wrestling with all these ideas of like, there's a better way to do strength training. I just know that we're missing something here. And I saw Ben's training and I was like, this guy's cracked it. You know, he's doing what Wolfgang's kind of talking about over there, but he's actually nailed this thing. So I signed up to his program. I think he had 50 members at the time. I was like, you know, I want to be part of this. And we were just chatting. We just started chatting all the time. And, it basically, the relationship just developed from me saying, this is really important stuff. You really need to get this out to the world. And Ben sort of says that influence of just having someone say, this is really important. And Ben had seen my stuff from way back in 2012 or so, when I was posting on YouTube. I posted some stuff, with Charles or Poliquin brand in it on YouTube. And Ben was kind of searching for his own knee solutions at that time. So he saw me doing, you know, full depth squats for high reps and whatever. And so the relationship really just built from there of like, man, you've done something great here. And me just having the, you know, being able to say that, I think a lot of guys, you know, we struggle to say that. And it is a struggle for me at times as well. I'm not going to lie. Like, you know, there's a lot of, I think it's really built into us to socially rank and to, you know, to have a pecking order and whatnot. I think that stuff is so deeply ingrained. But just having the, you know, just saying to him, hey, man, you've got something really special here. Well done. And, you know, the world needs to see this. Ben basically says since that point, he's trained really hard, and he's also, you know, worked out his online, his online presence and whatnot. And now he takes his business very, very seriously. So, and Paul was the same. It came through a friend. So a friend who had been part of Real Movement, and we worked together, improve ketones as well. So we'd worked together since, I guess, 2016, 17. And he said, hey, there's this guy you need to meet. And so he sent me one of his videos to watch. And I was like, wow, this is really good. And I'd started to think a lot more about money. And other times in the past, I would have just not really cared because I was just building real movement and it didn't matter. But yeah. I'd gotten to a point where I was like, I actually need to become wealthy because this is getting in the way of my quality of life, like not being smart with money. I thought if I just made more income, then everything would be fine. But I'd like double my income and then double my income again and then double my income again. I think I doubled my income like four times between, backpacking days, I was making next to nothing. And then in France, I wasn't making very much. And then the Roosters wasn't very much either. And then, I started to work for myself. I'd gotten to a point that I thought I would never get to. And yet still I ended up back in financial pressure and it was taking away from my quality of life, my time with my family. So I was like, I have to work this out. So not too long into that journey, I'd already made quite a few big decisions before I got exposed to Paul there, but he sent me a video and I watched it and I was like, yeah, this guy's worked out a lot of things. Like this is some of the conclusions that I've arrived to, a bit like with Ben. Like I kind of had the ideas in my head, but didn't really have clarity about them. I wasn't really implementing them well. Right. So Paul's, I watched that. And then a few months later, he reached out again and said, hey, you should do this assessment. So I filled out these, he has like a Genius and a Spiral assessment. And I didn't really take it that seriously. And I was sort of like a bit cocky of, I'm doing okay. Like by that stage, Real Movement had sort of 500 members again, and we'd rebuilt well. And I was thinking, I'm all good. I don't really need anyone's help at the moment. And then I had a call with him and I was like, okay, yeah, there's a lot here that I can improve on. So I asked him to, become my mentor that day and invested with him. And, it's probably one of the best decisions that I've ever made.
And that wasn't too long ago, Keegan, would that be right? That was 2019.
July last year, I guess. So
last year, was it? Yeah. Yeah, and I read, just doing the research again, just read that you had financial pressure. I thought it was 2019. But
I had pressure in 2019 year. And we decided to sell the house. Like we bought a farm, which was kind of our dream place. And we had some animals and we wanted to turn that into a real place where people could escape from the everyday grind and kind of reassess their life and goals and whatnot. So we had a big dream behind this place, but it just wasn't working out the way we had planned. And I made the decision that we needed to start again, to move on, to try something different. So we made that decision in 2019 and I invested a lot of money to get some advice on what to do next and how to make a change in 2019. And then we'd already sold the house and done a lot of the work to sort of move out of Australia with the business and all those sorts of things 2019. And then that sort of came along, I think, early 2020. I got that video. I remember I was in the French Alps. We went skiing there, second time I've been skiing in my life, and that's when I was watching that video from Paul. I watched it on loop a few times in the French Alps. And then a few months later we were in Noosa under all the restrictions and whatnot, thinking about getting out of Australia. So we were back in Australia when the restrictions started, and that's when I decided to work with Paul, or asked him if he'd work with me. So
nice, very good, life-changing experience, or life-changing from that day, obviously, for yourself. Can I ask you about working with Sonny Bill Williams, Keegan? What is your approach when you're going into a new training camp with an elite athlete like Sonny Bill? I just read a quote from him again on your website that his training with you was life-changing, but he says the thing he loved the most was the mental aspect of it. So how do you work with an athlete that's at the top of their game, like to improve their mindset for the 3 or 4 months you're working with them?
Yeah, well, that's probably the place to start is his mind really isn't set. That's what's really unique about Sonny. He's always looking for something that he can implement and do, and he has the ability to implement the behavior, which is very unique. So a lot of people have ambitions and ideas and desires, but very few people can implement behaviors. And that's the problem, actually, I think, in a lot of ways with modern education and exercise science and these things. They're not behavior-based. They're not behavior-based. And even strength programming, not being behavior-based negates a lot of the benefits. So Sonny will look for a solution and then he will behave that solution. If he finds a reputable source, something that, you know, that he needs to implement, try, and then, you know, the best of it stays with him. So that's what's really unique about Sonny. And I didn't know if I'd be able to help him, you know, like when we first started working together, 2013 at the Roosters, he'd just come off a pec tear. He'd been playing rugby in Japan and he had a boxing fight before the season started. So we, you know, had very little access, but I was like, I wonder if I'm going to have anything to offer, you know, Sonny Bill. He'd already done a lot by that stage in his career. He'd won premierships and played, you know, played in France and played for the All Blacks and whatnot already as well. So it was like, am I going to have anything to offer this guy? And, you know, like everyone, he had his things, you know. So, yeah, if you just take action on the most obvious things, I guess you treat the neck wound first is a good policy to have when you're working with someone, like whatever their biggest priority and short-term thing is, like work really hard on that and get a win. And then, you know, you can start to deal with some of the chronic things and some of the underlying things as you go along. So, it's always really special to work with Sonny. Like when one person teaches, two people learn. Yeah. I guess it's my goal, my job to bring the best to him when we work together. But, you know, he teaches me so much, and that's why I really, you know, that's why I took that opportunity to take a month-long camp with him at the end of 2019. It was basically like put my life on hold. We're just about to move overseas. We're selling the house. And I was like, well, you know, this is too good an opportunity not to do this with Sonny from a personal development perspective, more so than anything, you know. And so, there's always something to work on. I mean, the more recent time that we worked together, I went to help Sonny, you know, make it to the World Cup. I went over to New Zealand for a couple of weeks before the World Cup because there was some pressure and some talk about whether he was actually going to get the opportunity. And he was having some trouble with his knee. I think it was pretty public. And then he actually had a hamstring strain as well. So it was a checkered path into the World Cup. And I wasn't training him. You know, I wasn't his coach during that time. But when he had some trouble there, like he was looking for what else might help because he wanted to play in that World Cup, you know. And then after the World Cup, the knee, he had a bit more of a chance to work on the knee. He'd signed with, you know, Toronto Wolfpack in the biggest rugby league contract in history by a long way. And he wanted to turn up to Toronto or, you know, to England more accurately in his best shape. So, you know, we had that opportunity of a month together before he went to Toronto. And, yeah, I mean, there was a clear objective with that. He had some issues going into it. But that quote is actually from the camp we did after he torn his Achilles at the Olympics, the Sevens. You know, I wasn't training him in the lead up to that, but I think if I knew, you know, the ATG system, if I was an ATG coach at that time, I dare say I would have prevented that and a lot of the other hassles that a lot of players that I've worked with have had. But we worked post the Olympics to sort of get him back to his best to go back and play with the All Blacks and whatnot. So we had a 10-day camp, and that one was interesting because it was the day after my son was born, was the day he arrived, and Sonny's baby had just been born as well. And Manu was born the next day. Sonny arrived, and it was Manu was born on Christmas Day. And Sonny arrived on Boxing Day, and it was really probably the only person I would have, you know, had in our family home. Like, he stayed with us. We lived at Byron Bay at that time, and it was a really special time with him. And we did dive into a lot of kind of deeper thought about a lot around limiting beliefs and self-image and things like that. And I was sort of open about some of the things that I was going through. And I think Sonny had some important reflections during that camp. And he definitely went and changed some things and implemented some things in his life after that, that, you know, I'm very proud to have been connected, you know, with him and maybe planted a few seeds. Obviously he, you know, he made the behaviors happen, just like you putting people on and doing the ATG, you know, using the ATG system. You know, you're the genius because you're the one doing it. You're the one sharing it with people. And that's, you know, that's what it was with Sonny as well. But yeah, very special. It was a special time, but it's always very special when I've had those opportunities with him.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just bringing it back to Real Movement, Keegan. What's the philosophy of Real Movement? If you were to just explain in a few sentences or whatever, the philosophy of Real Movement, because there's so many courses on there, there's loads and loads of content. How would you describe it to someone that had no idea what Real Movement was?
It's a bit of a dog's breakfast when you get in there, but it's rich as well. So systemization is not a strong point. So you're going to see some significant changes in the delivery of Real Movement. And we're actually going to focus a lot on ATG, ATG coaches. Since 2018, I've known that that system really needs to get out to the world. So that's a big thing that's coming next, to endorse coaches around the world who are great students of that system, so that professional athletes, celebrities, you know, people who can afford it can go and work face-to-face with a great local coach, which at the moment, you know, that doesn't exist and it needs to exist. Like the $50 a month online is great, but, you know, there's another opportunity. And all the pro teams, to be honest, they all need an ATG coach. You know, that's my perspective. You know, I think you'll see every major sport recruiting ATG coaches over the next sort of months and years. So to be ATG endorsed, I think will be a huge thing. So that'll be a shift that's sort of, Ben and I have been speaking more about how we can kind of take these things to a new level. So it's actually a new Instagram, ATG coach. If you do at ATG coach, it's a new Instagram channel there. So that's a big part of kind of simplifying that thing of like, why is there so much in there? But if we zoom out to answer your question, Real Movement, it is like that. How are we meant to be living? Like what's the best environment that we can create for humans to thrive in? And, you know, we create it for ourselves and, you know, we're looking to build that supportive environment around people and encourage them into, you know, having the best ideas going around, having the best, you know, healthiest blood, from eating great food and having great, there's a lot of things that influence the quality of the blood. The mind is a huge factor and influence on the quality of the blood as well. But if we have great ideas and great blood and we're doing great training and we're having great conversations, then eventually, you know, we're going to live greatness. You know, things are going to get better. Life's going to be good. So that's really what it's created for. And yeah. I mean, we want people to, the financial part has become more of the conversation. So I now work with more coaches to help them to have the financial, you know, progress and freedom that, you know, I'm enjoying and Ben enjoys. And, you know, it's a better place to live from as well. So it does make it quite broad, Barry, and it's not like a quick fix solution. Like there's no one way to do this. If, you know, you want to have a great life, like it's cool to have a soundbite, but ultimately, you know, you have to eat well, you have to train well, you have to have great conversations, you have to have the best ideas running around, you have to have financial freedom. Like as a brand, it's easier to be ATG, you know, ATG, because it's, you know, you choose a specific thing, you stay in your lane, you keep it really simple. But in terms of living well, it can't be solved like that. ATG can definitely be a catalyst, you know, if you get out of knee pain, if you, you know, you become more in demand as a coach, etc. Real Movement is really to create that culture and society, community, you know, create that environment around the people who want it to live a better life.
Okay. Can I ask you, what is your training and nutrition? What's it look like today? I know there's probably no gyms near you out in Sarah.
I'm in my gym, but it's an office gym. I think it's probably one of the best office gyms in the world. Yeah. But we've got some gear on the way. So we're just settling here as well. It's been a short time, as you know, Barry. So hopefully we'll you know, we're looking like we're going to sort of settle here. We might set up a base somewhere else in the world as well, but it's very difficult to make those sorts of decisions with the, you know, the current climate. Today I have eaten nothing. I have had a green tea, and you know, it's 1:40 for those listening back to the podcast. I have done a bunch of chin-ups. I've done a bunch of dips. I have done a lot of ATG work. I took my kids to play with some other kids. So we homeschooled our children, 4 and 6. They went to spend some time with another family this morning. So I took them there and I ran part of the way back and I did a bunch of little funny walking exercises, kind of ATG stuff on the on the go. That's my diet and training so far today.
Very good. I'm lucky enough. I have a home gym here in the garage. We're obviously on lockdown here in Ireland, so we've another 5 or 6 weeks of lockdown to go, I think. But I'm blessed. I have a nice setup. I've dumbbells up to 25 kg. I have a nice squat rack. I have a chin-up bar, gym rings, punch bag, sauna, ice baths. I'm lucky enough, Keegan, to be honest with you. I have it all set
Perfect.
Up for myself.
Sounds like a great place to get some time to reflect on your own.
It is. It's perfect for me. Yeah, it is absolutely perfect. I am conscious of your time, Keegan. I know you're a busy man. Can I just ask you a few, we'll call them random questions, but they're just about yourself. You can quick fire or elaborate Perfect. As much as you want. Okay. What makes you feel inspired?
Listening, wrestling with the ideas of the greatest minds, past and present.
Okay. When you think of the word successful, who is the first person?
Ben Patrick comes to mind.
Excellent. Ben obviously considers you his mentor. You consider him his mentor. So it's a nice relationship.
It's pretty cool.
Going on.
Yeah, he's a very special human. And, you know, he doesn't need to give the credit that he does. You know, I'm just an old guy doing my best. You know, he's a phenomenal athlete. And it's very inspiring what he does. So it has been great to build that relationship. And it's probably, you know, it's not that easy to find someone who is extremely high achieving, successful, intelligent, but also open to, you know, challenging their ideas and changing. We had a conversation just a couple of days ago and we made some significant changes in the ATG system. And it just started with a WhatsApp sort of conversation. And Ben was really open with like, yeah, there's, you know, I think there's something, you know, we can improve this area and we can improve that area. And I just love the fact that he's still on the search. Like the best is yet to come is a great place to live from, rather than kind of defending your ideas. So that's what's really special working with him.
Yeah, brilliant. What are you not very good at?
Lots of things. Systemization and getting things to 100% complete, I would say, has been my biggest challenge in life. I don't know if it's really my challenge. I don't know if I'll ever be any good at it. I think it's just who I am. So.
Yeah. Do you put pressure on yourself to succeed
Always.
In different areas, Keegan? Yeah.
I think it was wired in pretty early. My dad was a rugby league coach and I was around professional athletes and I went and watched whether his team won or lost and I watched his reaction to that and the crowd's reaction to that and media reaction to that from my earliest memories. So I think life has been about winning and losing. It was about winning and losing a lot from an early age and I kind of rejected that for quite a while. I'm not sure where I'm at with it at the moment, but achievement is definitely very, very difficult. A couple of people have challenged me with this in the last few days. Nick Bradley, who has the Sports Model Project, one of the most successful students that we've worked with, and Ricardo Semler, who's a genius as well, a Brazilian businessman. They're both talking about this idea of doing nothing, like literally being able to stop and not focus on anything. So Nick took 2 weeks out where he wasn't reading books, he wasn't meditating, he wasn't doing anything for the business. And he took 2 weeks to do that. And to me, that seems like the hardest thing. I don't think I've done that for like half a day. You know, it seems almost impossible what he achieved there or what he did. And I'm not sure if it's a good thing. You know, I am for achievement, for creation. I think there's a big rejection on productivity and success underlying in society and in the school system and a lot of popular media and things like that. The ability to not produce or not achieve, I'm not sure if I have that yet. So that's going to be an interesting thing to take on at some stage.
Yeah, we have that every year by Christmas.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. I hasn't made it. I don't know. I get my wife to look it up.
What are you most afraid of?
I think just not doing what I could have done, you know, having seen at the end of my life that you could have lived this way, but you chose to live that way.
Okay. And the final question, Keegan, how do you define happiness?
Well, that's kind of that question that the ancient Greeks apparently were saying, that it's to be able to look back at the end of your life and say you lived a life of virtue. There's a bunch of vocabulary and things to look up when you get into that. But, I think the big thing that I need to work on is to not let my mind wander onto the next big success and the next project and this sort of thing, to be able to be, you know, where I am. You know, Sonny always says, you know, be where your feet are. I think that's the real challenge that I could do with improving in that area. Yeah. Paul speaks about it as well, and I can see the presence with Ben, and you know, I think that's the big one.
Yeah. Sort of a monkey mind. You want to achieve more and move on to the next thing before you've something finished or something created.
Well, I think there's starters and finishers. I think there's, you know, there's the people who can really see the future and what's coming next. And there's the people who can see what those people are seeing and make it happen well. And there's very few people that do both. And success doesn't happen in isolation. That's a massive myth. And a lot of people condemn themselves to a lot of misery by trying to achieve success on their own. I don't know anyone who's been successful on their own, and I don't think we ever will, in sports or in business or anything. So the ability to leverage the ideas of others and leverage the different personalities, you know, if you look at Jung's work, Paul's been a big influence for me, sort of understanding the work of Carl Jung and personality types and the underlying subconscious drivers of those things. I think that we do, you know, there are differences amongst people, and recognizing who you are and what you're bringing to the table is a big thing. So I can often see a bright future for people more than they can see for themselves. I think if I have a superpower, you know, that's it. And I've seen it with Ben, and, you know, I've reinvigorated Paul's career, you know, to a large extent. He was pretty much retired, and now he's, you know, last night he presented to 150 people. So I think I can often spot the potential, and I saw it in Edo Portal, and I wanted to play more of a role with that as well. You know, he didn't need it, obviously. But I do tend to identify, okay, this is going to be massive. This is going to be the next big thing. The Prove It business was another example of that. You know, I was the first guy in Australia to sort of say exogenous ketones are going to have an impact on the world, and, you know, it's become a $100 million business plus. Recognizing your where you got your strengths and where they're not, you know, so I wouldn't give up that area of talent or refinement or genius or whatever it is. So I can't be greedy and say I want to be the best, you know, attention to detail person either, but that doesn't necessarily mean I can't be, you know, more in the moment when I'm doing things with my children and such, but I don't put it together with moving on to new things and looking for what's next. And I think that ability is really, I can't see how I would have done any of the things that I've done and had the amazing life that I have had so far. You know, from my own perspective, I'm very grateful for the life that I've lived up to this point. And it is partly because I'm looking for that future for the world and for myself, you know, so they're not exactly the same thing in my mind.
Excellent. Brilliant, brilliant. Keegan, it's been fascinating talking to you. I was looking forward to the chat for a long time, and I really appreciate you giving me your time.
Thank you, Barry. I appreciate the opportunity. And
And I'm hoping we'll talk soon. I have a few questions to ask you. So stay tuned. Keegan, thank you very much.
Champion, see ya.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.